Sexuality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
A warm welcome once again, dear listeners, from the beating heart of Tehran. I'm truly excited to guide you through another inspiring day on Iran Radio. We've lined up a mix of content, uplifting stories, thoughtful discussions, and the latest global updates, all carefully chosen to enrich your day. So stay with us and let's take a look at what's ahead. Our next program is The Ocean of Dua, an incredibly deep dive into spiritual supplications. We'll reflect on the rich spiritual heritage of Islamic supplications and ziyarat texts passed down from the Ahlul Bayt, as beautifully preserved in collections like Mafatihul Jinan. These sacred texts are a guide for the soul, leading to divine intimacy, moral awareness, and profound reflection. Then it's time for another segment of Radio Productions. Next up, Spring of Truth unveils the profound vision of Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. This program presents English translations of selected statements and speeches from the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, delivered on various occasions. Following that, the Gate of Knowledge reveals the timeless wisdom of Nahjul Balagha. This program is dedicated to explaining and illustrating the profound moral, ethical, spiritual, and social teachings found within this incredible text. The Ocean of Dua is coming up later, so stay tuned.
The Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Murarisi here with another special edition of this program, The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition and during this sacred and holy month of Ramadan, we'll try to talk about some parts of Iftitah supplication, and we'll be bringing you the commentary on some parts of this supplication. We'll be back again after you listen to some parts of this dua, so stay with us.
Ya Rab, innaka tad'uni fawalli 'ank wa tatahabbabu ilayya فتبغضوا إلي وتتوددوا إلي فلا أقبل منك كأن لي التطول عليك فلم يمنعك ذلك من الرحمة لي والإحسان إلي والتفضل علي بجودك وكرمك
O Lord, you invite me, but I turn away. You offer affection while I respond with disinterest in you. You love me, but I do not respond, thinking you are overreaching me. But with all these things, yet you do not abstain from bestowing favors and blessings on me from your mercy and generosity. From this part of the supplication, فلم يمنعك ذلك من الرحمة لي والإحسان إلي والتفضل علي بجودك وكرمك. We understood how the Almighty Allah loves His servants. Yet you do not abstain from bestowing favors and blessings on me out of your mercy and generosity. And we said, the reason we turn away from him might be from this fact that we do not recognize and know the value of getting closer and fervently praying to God. One of the ulama has said, it is undesirable for a servant to ask his master to provide his material needs, wholesome food, decent clothing, and pleasant abode. The wise servant is the one who is always preoccupied with acting upon order of his master. His master knows the set of rules of mastership as well as the needs of his servants. There is no need for the servant to remind his master of his needs. So you see, asking for such things is below lofty purpose. The servant must be heedful of his master's order and must execute it, and he shouldn't think about himself. So we all should ask God for the opportunity to serve him, and we must believe that this opportunity is itself one of God's mercies and favors. So we must ask God for an opportunity to become what is pleasing to him. Anyway, the doors of God's mercy are always ever open. So what is important in this case is the servant to acquire merits to talk to his master. To privately talk to the worshipped being, or ma'bud, is more valuable than anything else. If the servant is important in the sight of his master, he will allow him to beseech and fervently pray to him. The master will also listen to him and might give him whatever he desires. Among people, such opportunities and chances rarely occur, especially if the master is always busy. He hardly finds time to talk and listen to his servants. Even if the servant is extremely fond of his master and eager to talk to him, he will not find any opportunity. But what kind of God do we have? God is such a master that, notwithstanding his immense and indescribable might, he still accepts his servants no matter how wicked and ungrateful they are and listens to their supplications. Whenever his servants call him, he answers and welcomes them. In Hadith Qudsi, God said to one of the Israeli prophets, I am very fond of my servants and wait for them to return to me. They have turned their backs and kept aloof from me. In spite of that, I am waiting for their return. And that's why in another part of this dua, we read, Alhamdulillahi alladhi la yuhtaku hijabuh, wa la yughlaqu babuhu, wa la yuraddu sa'iluh. Praise be to Allah. None can disclose anything hidden by him. None can shut the doors kept open by him. And no one who makes a request is sent away disappointed by him.
فليصمه ومن كان
month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it. And whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
You know what part especially I'm eager of? This part that says, وَلَا يُغْلَقُ بَابُ, and His doors will never close. The Almighty Allah's doors are always open, especially that door of mercy that we have so many ways of reaching that door in this world. You know, dear listeners, it is only in certain periods that the kindness of a philanthropic person benefits others. Even the rulers that are known for their justice and magnanimity, they opened their courts to the public only on certain days of the year. They did not entertain everybody, every day, every moment, and everywhere. Yet the doors of divine mercy are always open to those who ask for His grace. He answers whenever you call Him, since He Himself has said, "Udu'uni astajib lakum," call unto me and I will answer you. That's why we should thank God for these mercies. Alhamdulillahi alladhi la yuhtaku hijabu. Praise be to Allah. And no one can disclose anything hidden by Him. وَلَا يُغْلَقُ بَابُهُ. And no one can shut the doors kept open by Him. وَلَا يُرَدُّ سَائِلُهُ. And no one who makes a request is sent away disappointed by Him. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to bestow on us the power and bravery to face dreadful events and difficulties in our lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, don't let stray, 'cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close, close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
It's too late. If you haven't spoken up yet, it might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the hall of shame. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late.
gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms. Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice, our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. But thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late.
Hello and welcome back to Attrition. I'm your host, Amar Ghazmi, and I continue to be joined for part two of the show with British-Palestinian medical doctor Rahma Al-Adwan. Rahma, you've repeatedly said that we need to free Palestine and Britain from Jewish supremacy. So what's your analysis of how and why the British state has been captured by Zionists?
The Jewish lobby exerts its influence with coercion. So if they're not blackmailing, they are funding. If they're not funding, they are threatening. If they're not threatening, they're infiltrating. It is usually one of those things. How they captured my general medical counsel, I truly believe that my case was being put in the hands of people who were going to take them further. Dr. Rehana Ali is a great example of this. Her case was rejected, the exact same complaint was rejected, I think, 2 to 3 times before it was put in the right hands of that person, that investigation officer, that case examiner, who then brought it forwards. So that's infiltration. That is Jewish supremacists, whether they're Jews or non-Jews, but they are enforcing Jewish supremacy inside our institutions. MPs wise, they're funded, but not only just funded, you know, Wesley Streeting has been basically groomed by the Jewish lobby since he was young. When he was at uni, the Jewish Chronicle printed an article to say that he was their friend at the NUS.
The National Union of Students.
Yeah. Wesley Streeting is a case in point, because I think obviously right now there's talks about potentially him taking over from Keir Starmer. I think if Wesley Streeting in any way, shape or form becomes Prime Minister in Britain, then you know Britain is absolutely completely controlled by Israel and the Jewish lobby, because he has been fully groomed from when he was younger. They take them on trips to Israel. That's another key thing. So many of our MPs through Labour Friends of Israel and Conservative Friends of Israel, they take our British MPs to that entity. God knows what they do there, but they come back and then it becomes Israel first. It is just no longer Britain first. You know, there's videos of Nandi,
Lisa Nandy.
Yeah, from 2018, talking about Palestine, and then now she's like, Israel first. She refuses to even speak about Palestine.
And she was also previously chair of Labour Friends of Palestine as well.
Exactly. So something happens there, and it's usually that trip and some money.
And the issue you raised of coercion, intimidation, blackmail is very important, because quite clearly, if you don't fall in line and support the Zionist regime, these lobby groups have the power to harass, intimidate, to destroy your career. And we see with your case how they've tried to destroy your medical career. And so if you want to get on in British public life, it seems that you have to be a Zionist, and also to go on the offensive against Muslims, Palestinians and Arabs.
Well, totally. You know, this is far beyond me as a person, far beyond me with my medical license. I think if any lobby group is able to ruin the life of a doctor in a nation who has not harmed anybody and not broken any law, then we're in a lot of trouble. If they can do that to me, then any British citizen is next. You know, this is the end of free speech in Britain. You know, this is the demise of not only our independence. That's already gone. We're already captured. But this is now about our ability to speak freely, our freedom of assembly, our freedom of speech and expression. That is what is right now being attacked in Britain by the Jewish lobby.
I want to get into the details of the General Medical Council's case against you. I appreciate that there's a lot to recap, but could you explain in summary the level of harassment that you've been facing with this case?
Sure. You said the General Medical Council's sort of campaign against me. It is, it might appear that way, but I think it's literally me versus the Jewish lobby, because the General Medical Council is just, it's not an independent regulator. So they initiated an investigation on me last year. That was 9 months long. I responded, case closed, no outcome. They had to tell lawyers for Israel, she's not a quote-unquote anti-Semite, and she's not a terrorist supporter, so that's it. Then, again, this is the incessant harassment and complaints of the Jewish lobby. They kept going and harassing the General Medical Council. A second investigation was opened in May this year, 2025. But this time, even worse, they kept complaining, to the point where the GMC referred me to what is called an interim orders tribunal hearing, which is an emergency. It is an extreme measure where the General Medical Council go, well, we're investigating you for these allegations, but as we investigate you, actually we think you should be suspended or you should have conditions placed on your practice. So that happened. I went to the hearing on the 25th of September, and I defended with my legal team. I defended a bundle of about 450 pages, and I came out and the panel found no reason to place any order on my practice. So I won that. 12 days later, the General Medical Council re-refer me again to this hearing, this emergency hearing, that actually a lot of doctors who have actually physically harmed patients through their practice might never actually be referred to an IOT hearing. That's where I am at the moment. So I'm facing a second IOT hearing in my second investigation for exactly the same issues that the Jewish lobby does not like. And all this shows is that I have been exonerated at every single level of investigation up until today. I've won everything against them, yet somehow I'm still being painted as this evil villain.
And you've said that these IOT hearings, these interim orders tribunal hearings, are only for really extreme cases in relation to patient care. But in your case, it's purely in relation to social media posts.
So the IOT hearing is an emergency measure because it is saying that whilst the GMC investigate, you can't practice as a doctor, which means that the GMC, through the tribunal, will remove you from being able to care for the British public. That's why it's an extreme measure, because whilst you investigate, you're saying that whether this takes 2 months or 9 months, like my first, this doctor is not able to treat the British public and care for them. That's an extreme, because that is a negative for the British public. But the GMC are willing to do that and to take moral doctors away from the British public because the Jewish lobby says so. I think that's why it's a, you know, people, I don't think people understand why it is an emergency measure. There's incidents where doctors are being investigated for misconduct, for potential patient harm, for alleged inappropriateness, you know, with patients who might not get an IOT hearing. Yet I am being referred for a second one, again for a speech for like you say, social media. It's making a mockery of our medical regulation.
Well, I think your case really highlights the nature of Jewish supremacy in Britain, because you can just contrast the way that you've been treated with the way that some other Jewish doctors have been treated. So if we take the case of Dr. Justin Stebbing, in 2020 he was investigated by the General Medical Council over allegations that he failed to provide adequate care to 11 patients that he cared for. He admitted to 30 of the 36 charges against him. He was found guilty of another three. He was found to have inappropriately treated patients given their poor prognosis, overstated life expectancy and benefits of treatment, failed to gain informed consent by not discussing the risks and benefits of treatments, and failed to maintain proper records. He was also found to have engaged in inappropriate communications with a female patient. But he was only suspended for 9 months, and he wasn't even struck off, and he didn't even get referred to an IOT hearing like you've been. And then you have Dr. Liz Lightstone, who, in my view, has engaged in open Islamophobia and denial of the genocide in Gaza, but no action has been taken against her. This is a two-tier system, isn't it?
The two-tier system in Britain is that there is one treatment for Jews and another for non-Jews. That is what my case highlights very, very clearly. You mentioned the two Jewish doctors, Justin Stebbing and Liz Lightstone. Despite what you've mentioned with their misconduct, and I call it anti-Muslim hatred, I don't like the term Islamophobia either. So yeah, it's not just the terms about, you know, Jews that I contest. But they have the chutzpah, the audacity, to complain about me. Those are the two complaints. Justin Stebbing is who kick-started my second investigation.
Well, it was remiss of me to not mention that, actually, that Dr. Justin Stebbing is one of the prime complainants against you. And as you say, he has the sheer audacity, the chutzpah, to be complaining about you when he was found guilty of misconduct in the course of his practice as a doctor, not for social media posts.
Yeah, it is the chutzpah. You know, him and Liz Lightstone, I wouldn't want them anywhere near me or my loved ones. Straight, you know, I am not afraid to say quite loud and clearly that if there is a Israeli or a part Israeli British doctor, I do not want them anywhere near me or my loved ones. And if there's a doctor that supports, you know, who supports Israel, I too do not want them I don't want them anywhere near me in terms of medical treatment, because I think having that position is the most sort of antithetical to our medical ethics. But yeah, those two doctors, one of them Stebbing, you know, a record of misconduct and terrible behavior and dishonesty, recurrent dishonesty. That's what the MPTS actually said about him, that he was consistently dishonest. And that is what he wrote for me in the complaint that he made to the GMC. He called me dishonest.
Every accusation is a confession when it comes to the Zionists.
100%. It is just such Jewish supremacist behavior. Liz Lightstone, I did, I think, two posts about her atrocious a justification or alleged justification of murdering Palestinian journalists and medics, and she went ahead and complained about me. So there's a complaint from her in this bundle now from Liz Lightstone, and she sent that complaint whilst she was holidaying in the terrorist entity. It is just, oh, and another one is Dr. Miriam Green. She is the Jewish doctor that I worked with at the Whittington last year, who went behind my back. I didn't know that she did this, but she complained to the Whittington. She complained to my seniors. She was my junior, right? Never had an issue with her face to face. She complained to my trust. She complained to my seniors. She lied about me in the Daily Mail with the Sabrina Miller article, which ended up creating this huge campaign against me, getting me doxxed, me having to call the police. Dr. Miriam Green, I mentioned her when I defended myself against her lies in the Daily Mail. She called the police, saying that I was sort of sharing her details online when I was defending myself against her lies. And not only that, she complained to the Jewish Medical Association, who, in their complaint last time, said that I was doxing her, that I doxed Miriam Green. Miriam Green, who got me sacked from the Whittington, who lied about me in the Daily Mail, getting me to the point where I feared for my life and my family's life, and who called the police on me for defending myself against her. Apparently I'm doxing her. So I'm going to continue to say her name because it's not doxing, it just shows you the arrogance, the behavior, the feeling untouchable. You know, that is somebody I wouldn't want to care for me or my loved ones, you know. And not just that, after my hearing, now for this second hearing, lawyers for Israel are also saying that I'm harassing and doxing Miriam Green. It just comes up constantly, even though I made a few posts about her,
I mean, this type of behavior is absolutely typical of Zionists. I mean, I mentioned before that every accusation is a confession, and that they perpetuate a position of victimhood while actually being perpetrators of aggression against others. We should also talk about your arrest on the 18th of October. This was just days before you had a tribunal hearing. It's quite clear to me that you were arrested at the behest of the Israel lobby, and probably also the British Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, who, in my view, is a Zionist fanatic and an asset of the Zionist regime. I just want to read out some of what the arresting officer said, because it's pretty sinister. So they started by saying, on the 21st of July, at a pro-Palestine protest which took place outside of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, you gave a speech which amounted to calls for the eradication of Israel and implied support for all those involved in armed resistance against Israel, including organizations such as Hamas. So firstly, it's not illegal to call for the eradication of a nation state, and it's also perfectly lawful to support armed resistance against the Zionist state, because Palestinians have that right under international law. They then started talking about the pro-Israel MP Wes Streeting, and they also said that you were being arrested for comments directed at him that could be interpreted as anti-Semitic, including anti-Semitic tropes, which could be grossly offensive in character. I mean, Wes Streeting isn't even Jewish, so it's very, very strange. And then they said, on the 7th of October, you posted a variety of communications which demonstrated support for Hamas's attack on Israel. So, firstly, it wasn't a Hamas attack, it was actually a coordinated operation between all factions of the Palestinian resistance, including the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFLP, which is not proscribed in Britain, and also its armed wing is not proscribed in Britain. They then carried on, an attack which involved murder, rape, even though there's zero evidence of rape, right? That's just blatant atrocity propaganda. And then they continued, and kidnap of Israeli citizens, which could be considered grossly offensive in character. This looks like a charge sheet written directly by the Zionist state, or indeed by Wes Streeting, on their behalf and then sent to the police. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, totally. My arrest 2 days before my hearing was completely ordered by either straight from Tel Aviv or at least certainly from the Jewish lobby in Britain. The police were just, they're just pawns. You know, there is just no British independence. We don't have a sovereign Britain. The allegations that the police said, if you change Israel for Britain, I wouldn't have been arrested. I could have said that I don't want Britain to exist, and I could have made all of those remarks about Britain. I would not have been arrested. That is Jewish supremacy. I could, you know, that is the two tier. But the British state is allowing itself to just be used by this power to enforce something that Jewish supremacy only benefits 0.4% of the British population, because 0.4% are Jewish. Now, obviously, some of those Jews might not engage in Jewish supremacy, but it's still there, open for them. So I think it's time that the British public kind of wakes up to this. You have a doctor who is British, who has never harmed a patient, who has an unblemished record, being doxxed, harassed, smeared, arrested for a foreign entity. And now we are looking at potential changes to the law because of Wesley's treating, saying that you are guilty before you're innocent. If you're accused of anti-Semitism only, you can be accused of being a murderer or a rapist, but you are innocent until you're found guilty. But if you're accused of anti-Semitism, then you will, in the NHS, you will be guilty, you'll be suspended whilst you're being investigated. That couldn't be anything but Jewish supremacy. And he's meddling into our independent panels. So there's no finality of justice if you're found to be innocent, but you know, Jewish supremacists think, nope, you're guilty. Our politicians and our institutions will retry you. And if the Jewish lobby is not happy with you, if you're threatening, if you're saying things that threatens their supremacy, then you're guilty before you're found innocent. I mean, that's outrageous.
I just want to add something briefly about that in terms of Wes Treating's intervention. Number one, he's the health secretary. He's a member of the British government. If we're supposed to have a separation of powers, then why is he meddling in the internal affairs of a professional regulator and how they decide to govern the medical profession? But nevertheless, he appears to have threatened legal action if they don't give him the decision that he wants. And in response to your victory at the Interim Orders Tribunal, before they re-referred you to another tribunal, he announced a government review on tackling anti-Semitism and other forms of racism in the NHS. And who did he appoint to conduct that review? He appointed the Zionist zealot Lord John Mann. Now, John Mann, until 2021, and he might have accepted more donations since then, but what I know is that during his long political career, until 2021, he'd accepted £36,815.92 in donations and junkets from the Israel lobby. And this is the person who has now been put in charge of a review into supposed anti-Semitism in the NHS directly because of your victory. So that just gives you an indication of the state of things. But I want to steer away from all of that now and lastly speak about the Thawabit. So these are the red lines in campaigning for Palestinian liberation. Could you just explain, for the benefit of our viewers, what are the Thawabit and why should we insist on them in the campaigning that we do here in the West?
The Thawabit are the non-negotiables, or the constants, the red lines of Palestinian liberation. They're derived from the Palestinian National Charter that has 33 articles. This is what they don't want you to know about. The Palestinian National Charter was agreed on in 1968 by all Palestinian factions and the Arab League. and it is the most pure, authentic Palestinian nationalist voice. And that is what the Palestinian National Charter lists, what is required in order to have national freedom and sovereignty in Palestine by Palestinians. It contains all the answers that anybody could have to questions that they may go and ask maybe a liberal or, you know, somebody in the West. Palestinians have already set that out. If you asked most people in the movement, in the Palestine movement in the West, if they have read those 33 articles, when I say article, it's just a few lines each, in the Palestinian National Charter, I doubt that many of them would have. And that is where I think the movement has been subverted. And those articles are what we derive the Thawabit from. The Thawabit are basically four principles. It can be 4 to 6, depending how you word them, that are just non-negotiable. This is how Palestinians have set out their liberation. Number one, Palestine. What was the British mandate of Palestine? That is the Palestinian map. And it is not divisible. You can't partition that. That is Palestine. It is Arab. From the river to the sea, the entire thing is for Palestinians. And its capital is Al-Quds, Jerusalem. And the Palestinian people believe in armed struggle and actually believe that that is the way to liberate Palestine. The Palestinian people reject normalization. And the right of return for all Palestinians to Palestine, that includes, you know, over 7 million Palestinians. And within that, that encompasses who stays. And the Palestinians have already said that the Jews who were in Palestine before the Jewish supremacist, the Zionist project started, are Palestinian Jews. So they are counted as Palestinian, but not the rest.
Well, thank you so much for that, Dr. Rahma. I really appreciate you sharing your insights with me. I'm afraid that we've run out of time, but thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
And thank you. See you next time.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
This is a short part of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints on results and outcomes of the uprising of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, peace be upon him. Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, set off the great Ashura uprising and by sacrificing his own blood and that of his dear ones, rescued Islam and justice, condemned the machinery of Bani Umayyad and devastated its pillars. Were it not for the sacrifice for the great protectors, lit guards of Islam and their brave martyrdom, the strangulating, cruel regime of the Umayyads would have presented Islam upside down and all efforts of Prophet and his devout disciples would have been wasted.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio Well about the subject of Muharram and Ashura Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh said the month of Muharram is the month during which people are ready to hear the issue of truth Well the sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh centers around the truth of Ashura which is what people should learn and get from the morning gatherings of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam After the martyrdom of Imam alayhi salam and his companions, when word of what had happened at Karbala spread everywhere, it had a very profound effect on Muslims. The one-sided nature of the killing of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his companions and the merciless nature of the rulers in killing them and taking their families captive caused the Muslims to begin to truly hate the Umayyads. In addition, the way the Imam alayhi salam and his companions were killed increased the respect and love of Imam alayhi salam in the hearts of the people. They saw Karbala as a true epic battle and this gave them the necessary courage to rise up against the Umayyad rulers. The revolts of people of Medina, the Tawabin, the Mukhtar, all had roots in Karbala and the wave of rage and courage which it inspired. What I intend to say is that Ashura has become more than just a historical fact. It can rather be likened to school which builds complete human beings. The revolution of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is not just something which only belongs to the Muslims of this world. It rather belongs to the freedom-seeking human beings of this world. Many of the intellectuals from various nations and faiths have used Karbala as a model and point of inspiration for salvation from oppression and unjust domination. There is hope that in the world of today, the oppressed nations will take lessons from the story of Karbala and rise up, crushing their oppressors once and for all. Okay, dear listeners, it seems that we run out of time for this episode. For ending, let me just recite the sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh about Muharram and Ashura once more. He said, the month of Muharram is a month during which people are ready to hear the issue of truth. Thank you very much for listening to us. And until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome to IRIB English Radio. The program is The Gate of Knowledge. This is your host, Sayyid Salman Naqavi, and we are going to discuss another narration of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam as presented in the Nahj al-Balagha. This is the third narration that we are going to talk about, where Mawla Ali is talking about the different aspects of the human soul and different attributes of the human soul which are not good. Imam Ali says, وَقَالَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامُ الْبُخْلُ عَارٌ وَالْجُبْنُ مَنْقَسَةٌ وَالْفَقْرُ يُخْلِصُ الْفَطِنَ أَنْ حُجَّتِهِ وَالْمُقِلُّ غَرِيبٌ فِي بَلْدَتِهِ. Here are four points that are to be taken into consideration. And one of them is, the first one is Al-Bukhl Aaron, being miserly, being stingy, is a matter of shame. Al-Bukhl Aaron. Wal-Jubnu Manqasatun, being afraid, being a coward in different situations is something which causes the personality of a person to become defective. Al-jubnu manqasatun. This causes a defect in one's personality. So we shall continue with the third one after the break.
Nahjul Balagha, also known as the Peak of Eloquence, is a compilation of sermons, letters, and sayings attributed to Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the cousin and son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and greetings be upon him and his pure household. Regarded as one of the most authoritative sources of Islamic wisdom and knowledge, this book reflects the profound insight and spiritual teachings of Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on various matters, including ethics, morality, governance, and spirituality. The eloquence and wisdom exhibited in this speech and teachings within Nahjul Balagha have made it a timeless masterpiece that continues to inspire and guide Muslims and non-Muslims alike in their pursuit of truth and enlightenment. All of this is presented to you in the program Gate of Knowledge on Iran Radio.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, the Gate of Knowledge. We were talking about the narration from Imam Ali where he says, Al-Bukhlu Arun wal-Jubnu Manqasatun. We have talked about the first one and the second one. We're coming to the third part. Wal-Faqru Yukhrisu al-Fatin an Hujjatih. Poverty causes a person who is intelligent otherwise, he will not be able to defend his case. He will not be able to put forward his argument. People will not listen to him. Unfortunately, there are people in society who look at the person, the position of a person, the wealth of a person, instead of looking at his knowledge and looking at his intelligence. So in the eyes of such people, he will not be acceptable. His words, even if they are wise words, intelligent words, he will not be able to make people accept his words. وَالْمُقِلُّ غَرِيبٌ فِي بَلْدَتِهِ. And a person who is a destitute, who lacks something of wealth or power, position, he is also, even if he is living in his own society, in his own city, even in his own town, but people will not look upon him. They will not be able, he will be a stranger to them in society because he will not be able to interact with them. He will not be able to meet people. People will not look upon him with a good name, and therefore he will feel that he is a stranger in society. So in these four parts that the Master of the Faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen, is talking about, he's pointing to the defects that we have in our personality, in our character, and they cause us to have a bad name in society, or they maybe diminish our stature in society. And number one is being miserly, stingy. We're not using. We have wealth in our hands. We have power. We have position, but we're not using it in a way that is appropriate to that position or to that power or to that wealth. We are refraining to use it in its proper place and in the proper manner. God Almighty has given us something, we're not using it. That is shameful. And then we have the situation where we are afraid of carrying out things. We do not take initiative.